Well, greetings and welcome to Caribbean Forum here on the Uhuru Radio Network, where we expand our ability to communicate and unite the struggles of African people towards victory and independence in our lifetime. I'm Ron Bob Semple, and here on the forum, we examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals, both at home and across the diaspora. We'll bring you news, views, interviews, thought-provoking discussions, Caribbean theater of the mind, and of course, musical interludes. Well, 2011 is now halfway through, believe it or not, and in the southernmost part of the United States, that means the hurricane season has officially begun. And because of the strange weather patterns we have been experiencing all over the globe, it is incumbent on those who are in hurricane paths to remain vigilant in preparing for any eventuality. June is also Caribbean Heritage Month, celebrating its sixth anniversary this year. Haitian actor and activist Jimmy Jean-Louis, who is no stranger to this broadcast, has been named the spokesperson for the National Caribbean American Heritage Month celebrations. He joins Jamaican-born film and television actress Cheryl Lee Ralph, who served as spokesperson since 2006. Juneteenth is the oldest known celebration of the ending of slavery. Dating back to 1865, it was on June 19th that the Union soldiers, led by Major General Gordon Granger, landed at Galveston, Texas, with news that the war had ended and that all slaves were now free. Well, joining us this morning, obviously not that Major Granger, but former Brigadier General David Granger, who is the People's National Congress Reforms candidate for the presidency of the Republic of Guyana. Also on the broadcast this morning will be the founder of the Caribbean Women's Social and Cultural Association of America, Mr. Austin Tewitt. Well, around 200 million people who identify themselves as being of African descent or ascent live in the Americas. Many millions more live in other parts of the world outside of the African continent. In proclaiming this international year, the international community is recognizing that people of African descent represent a distinct group whose human rights must be promoted and protected. Members of the Garifuna community near Tela, Honduras, the Garifuna people are of mixed African, Arawak, and Carib ancestry and native to the Caribbean coast in Central America. This international year offers a unique opportunity to redouble our efforts to fight against racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerance that affect people of African ascent everywhere. People of African ascent are acknowledged in the Durban Declaration and Program of Action 1 as a specific victim group who continue to suffer racial discrimination as the historic legacy of the transatlantic slave trade. Even Afro-descendants who are not directly descendants from slaves face the racism and racial discrimination that still persists today, generations after the slave trade ended. So tell a friend that Caribbean Forum is on the air for the next 2 hours here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Well, like Mother's Day, Father's Day is every day. And we'll be paying tribute to our fathers tomorrow on Golden Sunday Sounds, which is heard Sundays here on the Uhuru Radio Network, hosted by yours truly from 7 until 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we look forward to seeing you tomorrow, Sunday, June 19th, as we celebrate our fathers. Well, this is one of the all-time favorite songs that Luther Vandross dedicated to his father, Luther Vandross Jr. Dance with My Father.
Back when I was a child, before life removed all the innocence, my father would lift me high and dance with my mother and me, and then spin me around till I fell asleep. Then up the stairs he would carry me, and I knew for sure I was loved. If I could get another chance, another walk, another dance with him, I'd play a song that would never, ever end. How I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again. When I and my mother would disagree, to get my way I would run from her to him. He'd make me laugh just to comfort me. Then finally make me do just what my mama said. Later that night when I was asleep, he left a dollar under my sheet. Never dreamed that he would be gone from me. If I could steal one final glance, one final dance with him, I'd play a song that would never, ever end. 'Cause I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again. Sometimes I'd listen outside her door, and I'd hear how my mother cried for him. Even more than me, I pray for her even more than me. I know I'm praying for much too. But could you send back the only man she loved? I know you don't do it usually, but dear Lord, she's dying to dance with my father again. Every night I fall asleep, and this is all I ever dream.
That unmistakable voice of Luther Vandross. That song, believe it or not, was recorded, released, I should say, 8 years ago, dedicated to his father, Luther Vandross Jr. I know the statistics are very, very concerning as to the amount of fathers who are supporting their children, and it's always a good sound when you walk through the door and the kids say that daddy's home.
You're my love, you're my angel, you're the girl of my dream. I'd like to thank you for waiting patiently. Daddy's home, daddy's home. Teardrops in your eyes.
Do you know of El Dorado, the ancient story told about that fabled city whose streets were lined with gold? The news was heard by rally, and a search was soon begun. Setting sun, they traveled up the rivers, searched mountains great and tall, and found that priceless treasure, the mighty Kaito Falls. Do you know? That fabled city whose streets were lined with gold.
Yes, that fabled city whose streets were lined with gold. That is Bill the Crooner Newman singing of The El Dorado, referring to Guyana, which was British Guyana, became independent on May 26, 1966, celebrating its 45th year of independence this year. And joining me this morning is the candidate that will be representing the People's National Congress Reform, the PNCR in Guyana, and this upcoming elections, Mr. David Granger. Mr. Granger, good morning and welcome to Caribbean Forum.
Morning, Ron. Great to be here again.
Absolutely. It is a pleasure having you on the broadcast, sir. And first of all, congratulations are in order for your being nominated as the candidate to represent the PNCR in the upcoming elections. We're going to try to just make use of the time that we have with you this morning, sir, and jump right into it. Mr. Granger, why do you feel that political apathy in Guyana seems to be breaking down?
I do not detect any political apathy. I think this year we have seen a surge, and this surge, I think, has a lot to do with our 45th anniversary of independence. And I think people, I think mature citizens, have been asking themselves, exactly what have we achieved in 45 years? And the answer to the question has not always been favorable, it has not always been flattering. And I think this year there has been more excitement than I detected over the last 20 years about the prospect of a change, because we're now in the new millennium, and I think Guyanese are comparing themselves with other Caribbean states where the quality of life is higher, and where there's greater prosperity, where there's less crime, where there's greater security, greater employment opportunities. And I think there's excitement in the air in Guyana that there is going to be a change, that we are going to reclaim that that dream of independence, in which they tell that Guyana become, the words of its motto, one nation, one people on destiny, and they feel that this is the time, this is the year, this is the election which will make that possible.
Education has always been critical in the Caribbean, of course, throughout the world. And the education system in the Caribbean is not what it used to be. I'm sure you will agree with me, maybe 10, 15 years ago. What has caused this breakdown, Mr. Granger? And should you be successful in winning the presidency there in Guyana, what drastic changes will your administration implement in the teaching profession?
Quite right, Ron. Guyana used to pride itself as being an education nation. We used to boast of having the Secretary General of the Commonwealth, the present Vice-Chancellor of the University of the West Indies, the past President of the Caribbean Development Bank of the Guyanese, and Guyanese scholarship was well known, not only in the Caribbean, but also in America and throughout the Western Hemisphere. So, what went wrong, I think, is that our teachers have been treated as run-of-the-mill public servants, and you know they have been treated almost like manual laborers. And I think many of them have fled. The Teacher of the Year in Belize is a Guyanese. The Teacher of the Year in Bahamas is a Guyanese.
That's right.
You can go to Botswana, you can go to Barbados, you can go to the British Virgin Islands and run into Guyanese teachers. I think the problem is that many of our public servants do not feel that their efforts have been appreciated by the present administration. And as a result of that, they have not been rewarded for their work appropriately. And actually, people go where they find greater satisfaction. They've been migrating in droves. What we need to do, first of all, is to create a virtual cycle in which teachers' conditions are so improved. And here I'm answering the second question. Teachers' conditions are so improved that they will want to stay. I think the most important aspect of the education system now is teaching, the teaching profession. And we need to revitalize the Sale Porter College of Education, and particularly the University of Guyana, from where most of our teachers come. And unless we provide better conditions for our teachers, better pay, better retirement benefits, for example, they are still required to retire at 55, and many of them want to go on working until 65 or longer. Why not? So the answer to your second question is yes, I'm going to improve the conditions of life of our teachers. I'm going to improve their salaries. I'm going to improve their packages. I will promise them directly to their faces. I said I will make teachers the best paid public servants in Guyana, better than the foreign service or the defense forces or anything else. And I will try to keep them at home. Unless we do that, unless we solve the teacher problem, we will not solve the education problem.
You know,
many other problems, you know, the infrastructure,
right,
the decaying infrastructure and so on. But I believe the critical problem is making our teachers comfortable and ensuring that we get the best out of them. And I think that will turn the education system around.
You mentioned the University of Guyana, which unfortunately is currently is in a state of disarray. Earlier this year, you met with students and faculty members there on the campus in Turkine. Who or what do you feel, Mr. Granger, is responsible for this national academic institution being on the brink of collapse? After all, Walter Rodney was one of its professors.
Well, I would not agree that it's in disarray. I think intelligent people in the education system know what the problems are. And I would agree with you that it is weak. And I think right now the standards are below what any sovereign nation would expect of their national university. The problem has come from underfunding. And I think the attitude of the administration to all branches of the public service, including the University of Guyana, which is still essentially funded by the state. I think that these institutions have been starved of funding. Money is funded for all sorts of other functions, but somehow or the other, when it comes to teachers, when it comes to public servants, when it comes to the foreign service, when it comes to the officials of state, the official departments, I think the question is one of underfunding, in which people don't seem to understand or appreciate the importance of these institutions. And as a result, there's massive demoralization among the people there. And I think that is one of the big problems. It is a question of underfunding. And once you underfund a university, there's very little research, there's very little incentive for high-grade academics to stay or for people from overseas to come and work there. And the students as well, as you may have read in other places, 80% of the students migrate after graduation. So it is a very bad situation, but I wouldn't say it in this way. Right now, Professor Lawrence Carrington, who's a Trinidadian, and he brought on the special arrangements to help to turn the university around. But he is suffering from the same problems that the last four vice-chancellors have suffered from. That is the starvation of funds by the state. You don't want to raise fees, which are now about $1,000 a year, and quite inadequate. And they don't want to give the university more funding. So the university is really caught between a rock and a hard place. They cannot produce students with high qualification, high professional qualification, and they cannot make the university competitive with the other universities in the Caribbean, at Mona, at Cave Hill, and St. Augustine. It's a very bad situation, I agree with you, but the government knows what to do. They have to put more money in the university.
Okay. Some Guyanese nationals, Mr. Granger, fear that if the People's National Congress reform gets back into power, it would marginalize East Indians, like how the People's Progressive Party, Civic, apparently is doing to African Guyanese. Are we going to return to the days of Appenjat? And for those listeners who are not too clear on what Appenjat is, if you can just expound on that, please.
Well, to answer the question, the People's National Congress is not going into the elections alone. It has already signed an agreement with the Working People's Alliance, the National Front Alliance, and the Guyana Action Party to form a partnership. And that partnership, once elected, will become a government of national unity.
Okay.
The PNCR has agreed to accept a name called the APNU, a Partnership for National Unity. That would be the name of the proposed coalition. So we will not be going into the elections as PNCR, we will be going in as APNU. There will be a new symbol. There will be a single slate of candidates. There will be a single manifesto. There will be a single launch. Right now, our four parties are merging their committees, their finance committees, their campaign strategy committees, to produce a single entity going into the national election. So I do not believe that people fear a PNC-dominated government, because I think the Guyanese people are quite fed up, particularly over the last 19 years, of the prospect of a single-party government. And I think that the question of a coalition has gone beyond speculation now. This is, I would say, 75% certain. And in the course of this month, June, there will be a launch by these four parties of something called the APNU. So that will be a new name in the lexicon of politics in Guyana. And this is how we intend to go into elections, which are expected in mid-October.
Well, that is great news, Mr. Granger. Would women play important roles in your administration, sir, should you be successful?
Well, the whole purpose behind the APNU is to ensure that all interest groups, all ethnicities, both genders, youth, religious organizations, labor organizations, receive representation. And this will, I think, help to prevent the alienation and marginalization of which some people complain. So, yes, we expect that all of these parties and all of our other partners who will join the coalition or the partnership to bring along various interest groups. And indeed, we expect that among them will be substantial members of the other ethnic groups, all of the ethnic groups, not the other ethnic groups, Africans, Amerindians, Indians, Portuguese, Chinese, and mixed people. Mixed people now constitute 20% of the population. So we hope that this will be more than a new political party, but this will be a movement of all political parties who oppose to the Progressive Party.
Would that group include some of your colleagues who were also vying for the PNCR nomination along with you?
Well, they are members of the committees. Mr. Basil Williams, Star Gwynedd, James Bond. I haven't seen Dr. Harding. I think he went back to work with an international organization.
Right, in Liberia.
Three of those nominees have been co-opted onto the central committee of the party, the People's National Congress Reform, and they have been participating in the work of the central committee and the other electoral committees, you know, the campaign strategy committee. So yes, you would like to see more and more of them.
If you've joined us, you're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Our special guest this morning is a presidential candidate of the Republic of Guyana, Mr. David Granger, and he's vying to be the next president of the South American nation. And if you'd like to join us in discourse, you can give us a call if you're calling within the United States. It's area code 727-565-1599. If you're calling us from across the pond in the United Kingdom, it's 440-203-6629. Mr. Granger, outgoing President Barrett Jagdeo has been very critical of your nomination, citing that you were involved in the rigging of elections under the Burnham regime in the 1960s and beyond, and the unfortunate deaths of two men who were trying to prevent the seizing of ballot boxes by the army. Could you clarify for our listeners these criticisms?
Well, an accusation of murder is very serious, and in this regard, Mr. Jagdeo is very reckless with the truth. And, I mean, it is a lie. It is a slander. He is very well aware that this event, which occurred 38 years ago, was investigated by a commission of inquiry. I have already stated publicly that I was not on the scene. I was not the director of that operation. And, in fact, I was located doing other matters, you know, at Tenerife International Airport, where we have a large base. So it is quite unfruitful for the head of state of this nation to make a public declaration that I had blood on my hands. And this could easily be disproven by a quick reference to the commission inquiry by Justice Dan Dupin, which was convened the same year, 1973. If Mr. Jagdeo wanted to know who did the shooting, all he had to do is ask the chief of staff who did the shooting or look at the commission of inquiry. So I think that was a very serious lie, and it was a slander against me. And certainly I haven't committed any charge. I've never been charged with murder in my life. As far as other accusations are concerned, again, I was not on the scene. I was not involved in the operation. He knows, I mean, certainly he was not the chief of staff at the time. And there were dozens of other officers. And remarkably, he never decided to call the name of another officer, but he just called my name. Because I presume I'm the one who is competing in the presidential election this year. But there are many other senior officers who were involved in that operation, and it's quite absurd that he should make a public announcement like that. And up to now, he has not withdrawn that announcement, which he made in March. As far as other accusations are concerned, well, I haven't been involved in any of these events that you spoke about. I've never read anything in my life. So, you know, it's really distressing that the so-called head of state, you know, should make these accusations against the former military commander without any shred of evidence.
We're going to take a short break, Mr. Granger, and on the other side, I'd just like you to share with us why you are confident that the PNCR would be successful in the upcoming elections in Guyana. We'll be right back after these important words.
This is Max Rameau with Take Back the Land in the Omojo Village. You are listening to UhuruRadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution.
For news, views, interviews, and thought-provoking discussions, tune in to Caribbean Forum with Ron Bob Semple every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 Eastern Standard Time right here on the Uhuri Radio Network.
Caller, could you hold on, please?
On
Sundays from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we'll bring you Golden Sunday Sounds with me, Ron Bob Semple. A relaxing 3 hours of music from around the world. Music is the food of love. So tune in every Sunday evening from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Golden Sunday Sounds.
Yes, we're looking forward to joining you tomorrow, Sunday, for Golden Sunday Sounds. We'll have a special Father's Day tribute for you fathers. And we do have a father on the line with us, our special guest this morning, Mr. David Granger. Mr. Granger, just before the break, I had asked you, you know, what makes you confident that the PNC would be successful this time around? Mr. Granger, you still there, sir? Mr. Granger, are you still there, sir? Okay, we just let's just try to see if we can reconnect Mr. Danger, Granger.
The promotion of its investment story.
I'll be right.
Mwen tan dan mouzik chak fwa m kembe men.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, I'm sorry, I thought you just lost.
Have you on here?
Yeah.
Mwen tan dan mouzik chak fwa m kembe men.
Yes, could you stand by, please?
Hold on,
with this two last another 10 minutes or so, sir.
Okay, fine.
Mwen tan dan mouzik chak fwa m gade nan jè. Yon bel ti melodi ke person pa konnen. Son muzik ki dous, pawol yo tre bel. Li sanle avek ou. Oh, oh, oh. Mwen menm sel ki ka fer
ton. Yes, I thought we had lost Mr. Granger. Mr. Granger, you are back with us. Yes, sir. I was asking you before the break, what makes you confident that PNC would be successful this time around?
My first response would be that the PNC is not alone. The fact that we are accompanied by three other parties is the single greatest source of confidence, because I think the Guyanese people are dissatisfied with the results of one-party government go over the last 6 to 7 years, and they don't want to see a single party in government. And we have been pursuing talks with three other parties for over a year, and other parties are rapping at the door. In fact, we kept the door open. So by the time elections are held in mid-October, the PNC will be a member of a team, a part of a team of maybe five or even more political parties. And it's because of that. It's because of the fact that people are fed up with the PPP administration and are fed up with one-party government, that we feel that we have a winning card. We feel that the Guyanese population as a whole wants to see several parties representing different interest groups, different ethnicities, different geographical areas, different occupational fields come together to give Guyana truly representative democratic government. I don't think they want to see this more of what has happened over the last 19 years. And I think that is the most important factor that will contribute to the victory of the PNCR with its allies in October.
Mr. Granger, we have a caller on the line. Caller, could you go ahead, please? Any questions for candidate David Granger?
Absolutely. I just want to, first of all, congratulate Mr. Granger for this move. I believe that is really the solution to the problems, especially the political problems of Guyana, and it augurs well for the future. But Mr. Granger, let me ask you, how exactly is the presidential candidate going to be determined from this pool of parties that are coming together?
Well, the answer is quite simple. We meet very frequently, and it will be determined by a consensual process. We have submitted short lists of names of persons who will be who the different parties would like to be presidential candidate, and also what we call a leadership team, from which the prime ministerial candidate is likely to be chosen. The constitution does not require a prime ministerial candidate, but it is being decided consensually within the what is now called the Joint Opposition Political Party, JOPP, but which eventually will become the partnership. But these matters, we've already agreed on something called a statement of principles, and we expect that the campaign will be formally launched by all four parties later this month, June. So that is, there is an internal process by which decisions are arrived at consensually, and that is how we proceed.
Mr. Granger, why has there been such a delay in the actual date of the elections being announced by the PPP government? If you can, if you are able to answer that question.
Well, the delay, if you can call it that, is determined by the actual process for registration and the preparation of voters' lists, which are in the hands of the Guyana Elections Commission. Only when a satisfactory list has been produced, and in fact, the last claims and objection period only ended on the 9th of June. So, once the preliminary voters list is produced and the claims and objection period has, to use the word, sanitized the list, that is, removed any anomalies or persons who are dead or, you know, maybe persons with incorrect addresses and so on, a new list will be published. And that list, when that list is published, it will then be possible to announce the date of election, because once the list is accepted, it is going to be a limited period of time, a limited window of opportunity for the Election Commission to actually state when the elections will be. Only then would the Commission notify the government of Guyana that it is ready to conduct the elections, and then the government has the option, I think, within a short period of time, of announcing when the elections would be. So right now, it is not, it could not be seen as a deliberate action by on part of the government to decide when elections would be, except if you argue that the government is not providing the funds for the Election Commission to move more quickly. But once the Election Commission is satisfied with the list, it will then notify the government, and the government has a specific period of time to prorogue the National Assembly and then and call elections.
I know we just have
but
a few more...
procedure.
Yeah, I know we just have a few more minutes with you, Mr. Granger, and you mentioned earlier the crime situation in Guyana, and several prominent Guyanese professionals, including journalist and activist Ronald Waddell, have been murdered in Guyana, and years after, their perpetrators have not been brought to justice. How would your administration, sir, change this perception of negligence and ineptitude?
There are two responses. One is the cause of crime, and I think it can be said that the worst or the most obvious cause is the trafficking in narcotics, because we have a situation in which international or transnational crime, particularly drug trafficking, is pumping violence into the country. There are lots of guns, drugs. Even this week, you know, I think earlier this week, a boat was found with drugs in the Cayuni River. This was a small boat, which is, you know, we could call it a water taxi. And cocaine to the value of $1 billion was found. So people protect that sort of lucrative trade with guns, and the guns are pumping violence in the country. So the first thing to do is to put a clamp on that international narcotics trade, because that is the main source of criminal violence in Guyana. The second part of your question concerned what the administration or new administration would do. And I would simply say that narco-trafficking is a crime, murder is a crime. You know, and we will use every diligent effort at our disposal, every resource at our disposal, to find out who committed these crimes, particularly the murder of the assassination of Minister Thaddeus Rio Sow, or the assassination of Mr. Ronald Waddell.
and bring these criminals to justice. But, yes, but we do not think right now that the current administration has the political will to persecute or to prosecute or to even to investigate these crimes.
But
no commission of inquiry has been held into the assassination Minister Saw.
But has the opposition, Mr. Granger, been forcing the hands of the present government to make sure that these crimes are, or at least that the perpetrators are caught? You know, I mean, bottom line.
These issues have been raised repeatedly in the National Assembly by our party, and the administration simply refused to convene a commission of inquiry. Because the administration has the majority, and if you introduce a measure or resolution in the National Assembly, it can simply be voted down. So that is what has been happening over the last 12 years. The National Assembly, instead of becoming a forum for discussion and the resolution of differences, has become an area in which the government imposes its will on unwilling people. So this cannot change until we have this government of national unity after the next election. But the climate situation is at the top of the agenda for all parties and even the population. Everyone is concerned about crime, and we agree that the police force needs to be reformed if the runaway crime now is to be brought under control.
Well, I certainly hope so, sir. And again, I thank you for affording us the time chatting with you, and I certainly hope that we can invite you back here on Caribbean Forum on these airways as the President of the Republic of Ghana. All the best to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bob Semple. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, sir. We've been chatting with the candidate, David Granger, who hopes to be the next president of Ghana. As he mentioned, the elections are scheduled for October of this year. We've been waiting for a more definitive date. We're going to come back in just a couple with our correspondent, Ms. Felicia Lassan. We'll be right back.
Chérie, vini pour me chanter pour vous. Son belle petite mélodie.
Faut que je sois bébé.
Son musique qui pousse. Parole yo très belle. Lui semblait avec vous.
Well, welcome back to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple. Yes, I'm sorry, my pot was open. that's what happens with live radio. Felicia Passard, welcome, the CEO of Heartbeat Communications. Welcome to these airwaves again. I know you were listening to the discourse there with candidate Granger. What's your take on that? And his views and his plans for the country.
Well, Ron, let me just say a very good morning to you and happy Chavez Day to you.
I thank you.
So I know, I think that Mr. Granger has the right attitude. I think, you know, from what I just heard, that multiple party government going into the election is really what we've talked about. We've had those conversations several times.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy that this is finally coming to fruition. I hope it becomes a real reality because you know how these things happen at the last minute. Somebody throws a power fit and fall off the wagon. But I believe they understand that neither party alone has a chance against the government. So if you're going to change the government, you have to come together to change the government. And it's not about who's going to be president or not. So I think kudos to them for that vision. And I think you know what he's saying is very good. It's obvious he's not on a power trip. It's obvious he's not just out there to be president, but he has some sort of national interest at heart, and he wants to see the country do better. So I'm very, very happy to hear that.
Okay. How was the Invest Caribbean Forum, Power Forum, which was held last week in New York? How did it go?
Well, Ron, I have to tell you, considering the struggles and the amount of work that was put into this, it really, really blew us away with the response and the turnout, and everything just went perfectly. In fact, now our critics have become our biggest applauders. And that is always a good thing when your critics can be on your side.
Especially in New York.
Well, in the Caribbean, because the big wigs at the Caribbean Tourism Organization at first did not believe that there needed to be an investment forum as part of Caribbean Week. And their sister organization, the Caribbean Hotel Tourism Organization, also was very critical of it because they talked. The CTO was competing with their investment forum. So it was a lot of politics. And at the end of the day, they've all applauded it. In fact, now they've wanted to be an annual part of Caribbean Week in New York, and they're also talking about how we can take this into their other conferences across the Caribbean. So it really, really blew us away. Really, I'm very, very grateful to God for all this.
What were some of the highlights?
The highlight, I think, came out of Dave Dowich, who was vice president at Goldman Sachs, and who, I opened it with my remarks because the day before, the World Bank had come out with figures that said the Caribbean is again going to be growing this year at about 4.5%, and this is coming off of a global recession. And those were my points to potential investors who were there and money managers. And Dave, he followed up that in his keynote by saying, yes, the Caribbean has so much to offer, but where our leaders are falling down is that we're not telling our investment story enough. We're not aggressive enough in our promotion like we've seen the BRICS do, whether they're Brazil or India or China. We're not seeing that coming out of the Caribbean. And that was his challenge there to the ministers, to the Caribbean leadership. That is really what has to change because we have the political stability, we mm-hmm. have the tax incentives, we have the climate, we have very highly literate people. We have so much. And like he said, it's not like getting up in the middle of the night to take a call into Asia because the Caribbean and North America is essentially on the same time frame. Okay. So all these positives were highlighted, and the one negative, he said, listen, we're not aggressive enough in making investment a priority in the Caribbean, and that really is what has to change.
Well, we certainly hope that a concerted effort will be made to implement those changes. Later on today, there in New York, Felicia, Congresswoman Yvette Clark will be teaming up with Congressman Luis Gutierrez to host a public immigration forum. Is comprehensive immigration reform going to pass?
The only way I see that happening, Ron, is if Mayor Bloomberg and all these Fortune 500 companies, a lot of whom are now owned by immigrants, founded by immigrants, or their children are still running it, the message has to be an economic one. When the farmers across this country are complaining that the immigration, the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. ICE is coming down way too hard and expecting way too much of them, and that is causing them to have a labor shortfall in the farm, that means that it is becoming an outrage for businesses. And when businesses are outraged, I think people listen. And that really is the key. I think businesses have to take this message. The message has to be economic. And President Obama has to start pointing to the economic message of immigration in this country. It cannot just be the right wing trying to play this like there are a bunch of illegal aliens here just wanting to get amnesty. The economic contribution of immigrants in this country and continued contribution is what has to be highlighted. And I'm very glad this week that the Mayor Bloomberg and his organization that is pushing for immigration reform came out with a very significant report that showed the percentage of Fortune 500 companies that immigrants started and continue to run and continue to succeed, including Apple, in this country. And those, I think, are the key factors when you look at what needs to be the message for immigration reform. Is it going to happen before the next election? I don't think so. I think the president, once he retakes the White House, and I think he can do that given the slate that the Republicans are putting up, I think he can definitely now, since he's no longer running again, he can definitely now have free will to do what he wants to really do.
I guess it's all politics, isn't it? Felicia, what have you been hearing from the constituents of Anthony Weiner after his resignation from Congress earlier this week?
It's very mixed, Ron, and it's surprising because a lot of people felt that a lot of other politicians have done similar things and they're still in Congress. And they did not understand why a personal mistake or misdeed or misstep would result in taking down the job of the congressman, because he was doing a very good job for his constituents in New York. Very, very aggressive, very good. He was just dynamic. It's just very unfortunate, and I think the Democrats showed no spine in this. Republicans would not show their people under the bus as much and as fast as the Democrats threw Anthony Weiner under the bus. He made a horrible mistake. I think, everybody's human. People make mistakes and do crazy things. They don't even know why they're doing it at the time. But when you look at the case of David Vitter, who is a Louisiana Republican congressman, he had similar situations, and he's still in Congress. It's very hypocritical.
There was a contention, though, Felicia, that if Mr. Weiner had admitted initially that he was responsible for it, he did do it, as opposed to just continuing lying and trying to cover it up, really worsened his situation, which is many feel was responsible for his collapse and his downfall.
Well, that is one side of the argument, but I think when you look at it, that's what politicians do. They lie about things. Look at the situation with Bill Clinton when he came out. It's like he did not have, sexual relations with that woman.
I'm sorry to cut you, Felicia. It was interesting what Robert Gates said before Congress day before yesterday. You know, about the fact that governments just lie to each other. He was just upfront about it.
I think that is what politicians do. And you look at the history of all these sexual allegations and sexual misconduct by politicians. I mean, that's really what they stand for. It's like, no, I didn't do it. And they get caught, and it's like, oh, yeah, I made a mistake, and you cry before the camera, and you say you're sorry, and life goes on. Sadly for Weiner, it's not going on in Congress, but I think, he's going to bounce back from this. Hopefully he gets the help he needs and comes out of this shining. It's amazing how we big up people like Charlie Sheen for all the nonsense that they do and give them, major deals.
Endorsements.
And tweets and all these things. And there you have poor Anthony Weiner, who's making, $100,000 a year and really, really trying to make a difference. Because he was a good congressman.
Yes, he certainly was.
He was really doing a good job. And I think, especially over here in Kew Gardens, this is part of his district over here, people are very, very sort of sad at the whole turnout of events, and they didn't think that he would resign. They thought he would stand up a little longer.
Do you think he'll really make a strong comeback?
He could. Look at Elliot Spitzer. I mean, come on.
Oh, wait, all right.
No
on CNN.
He slept with prostitutes. Now he's on CNN. So Anthony Weiner may get a deal by, MSNBC or somebody. And next thing he's signing like a penny again.
It's almost as if we just have to sit and wait for the next episode. Now, the Guatemalan mother of Arnold Schwarzenegger's love child recently gave Hello Magazine an exclusive interview, and I think that was one of the few photographs of the child that was published.
Yeah, it is. I mean, she's finally broken her silence and speaking out about the whole situation and sort of giving you an insight into how Maria Shriver is actually felt or dealt with this whole thing. And it's a very sad thing. I mean, these stories are always so sad when emotions get in the way.
Right, right.
Mistakes, It's so many people get hurt by all this. I think it's just a very human thing that happens, and people need. I think, especially in this country, people are putting way too much emphasis on all this. But everything that's sexual, I think, is just coming.
Felicia,
if people step back and sort of be more spiritual in their thinking and their approach, then we wouldn't have half these problems.
Well, sex sells in this country. You look at television and you see those ads. Most ads have sexual connotations. Whether you're selling a car tire or a pack of cigarettes, you know, there has to be that sexual connotation. And then you wonder why the morale of these young people that they are so low.
Absolutely. And you know what amazes me too? It's the young women who get caught up in these scandals. And how quick they are to just go on television and tell their whole personal life. Well, you know it was wrong when you were doing it, but how come it's such a big thing, you know? I mean, we come from a culture where doing wrong things are not something that you're just going out there and be proud of, you know? So this is like mind-blowing to me to see these young women just going out there and claiming they've done this guy and done that.
And 15 minutes of fame.
Wow.
Felicia,
amazing.
Before I let you go, is Carl Rodney of Carib News scheduled to be sentenced soon? And just tell our listeners the circumstances surrounding his dilemma.
Well, he is supposed to be sentenced next month. I think it's July 23rd.
Oh, it's in July. Okay.
July 23rd is the sentencing. And I'm not sure exactly if he's going to get jail time or not. So I think that is something up to the judge now. But it's unfortunate what happened with Mr. Rodney. Again, you know, lying to Congress is a bad thing. It's a federal offense, and it really is what he is paying for by filling out those forms and lying that it was the Caribbean Foundation Congress that were paying for these congressmen. But when you look at the actual Congress people, they have, except for Charles Rangel, they are basically free and clear. And so he's taking the fall for all of these guys.
Different strokes for different folks. Felicia, thank you once again, and all the best to you, and we'll see you next time on the broadcast.
Thank you so much, Ron. Always a pleasure, and happy Saturday again.
Thank you very much. Okay, it's just about a minute or so before the top of the hour, and we're going to be joined by Mr. Austin Tewitt on the other side of the news, and we'll be right back. Just stay with us.
This is your Caribbean News in Brief from News Americas Now. I'm Ken Webb. The Caribbean is strongly urged to compete in the investment scene. That word came from a power investment forum here in New York City last week. The U.S. urges migrants of the Caribbean and others to be on the watch. And Bayesian superstar Rihanna is about to do some homework. The Caribbean is being urged to compete for the global wallet share and step up the promotion of its investment story. That's the advice from W. Dave Dowrich, Vice President of Investment at Goldman Sachs. Dowrich made the call at the inaugural Invest Caribbean Power Forum, convened by Digitel Media Solutions Company, Heartbeat Communications, and the Caribbean Tourism Organization on June 9th here in New York City. The son of Barbadian immigrants insisted that the Caribbean's investment product stacks up against most other regions of the world. But where they fall down is in selling and telling their investment story. I spoke to Heartbeat Communications CEO Felicia Prasad about the event.
This event certainly surpassed our expectations, and we definitely look forward to making this a part of the annual Caribbean Week here in New York.
Caribbean tourism officials are being urged to develop targeted marketing strategy for the diaspora communities. The call comes from Dr. Keith Nurse, director of the Sheridath Ramphal Center for International Trade Law, Policy and Services, in a new study entitled Strategic Opportunities in Caribbean Migration, Diasporic Tourism and Investment. Unveiling the study at the CTO Forum in New York City on June 9th, Dr. Nurse said the focus has to be on utilizing the airline, media and nostalgic goods services, and IP sectors for cross-promotion and co-sponsorship. The U.S. government is urging Caribbean and other migrants to be on the watch for scammers. The Departments of Homeland Security and the Justice Department have announced a historic nationwide unauthorized practice of immigration law initiative to combat immigration services scams. The campaign is designed to stop scams and to prosecute those who are responsible while educating immigrants about how to avoid them. This is Carib World News in Brief from News America's Now. I'm Ken Webb, and I'll be back after this.
Bombarded by news but still can't find concise information on Latin America and the Caribbean in one place? Well, look no further than NewsAmericasNow.com. Get to your computer, point your browser to NewsAmericasNow.com. That's NEWSAMERICASNOW. NewsAmericasNow.com. Ranking in the top 10 of Google site searches and syndicated on dozens of websites and live weekly on radio in 8 U.S. states on 12 stations. NewsAmericasNow.com.
On the ET scene, Rihanna has signed a 3-year deal with the Barbados Tourism Authority for some homework. Under the deal, the Grammy-winning singer will exclusively promote her homeland of Barbados as a tourist destination. The partnership officially kicks off in Bridgetown, Barbados on August 5, 2011, with a full-length concert of her Loud Tour produced by the BTA and ROC Nation. The value of the deal was not disclosed. And in sports, the 2011 LIME, sponsored by Caribbean American Netball Association, CANA, competition is underway. The event began on June 11th and 12th at the Lincoln Terrace Park in Brooklyn, New York. This is the second of a multi-level deal between LIME and CANA, who insist that the partnership is already paying dividends. 13 clubs are expected to start the regular season on Saturday at noon at the park. That's this week's Caribbean News in Brief from News America's Now. Until next week, I'm Ken Webb.
Hi. I'm Alan Bomar Jones, and you're listening to Caribbean Forum with Ron Bob Simple.
Tune in to Africa Live with your host, Yabinga Zimbabwe, every Sunday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. as we discuss issues facing African people around the world, from Brooklyn to Brixton, Cameroon to Caracas, here on UhuruRadio.com.
I say, let us put man and a woman together to find out which one is smarter. Some say men, but I say no. The women got the men, they should know, and not me. But the people, they say that the men are leading the women astray. But I say that the women of today smarter than the man in every way. That's right, the woman is smarter, that's right. The woman is smarter, that's right. The woman is smarter, that's right. That's right. Ever since the world began, woman was always teaching man. You listen to my bit attentively. I'm going to tell you how she smarter than me and not me. But the people, they say, astray, but I say that the women of today smarter than the man in every way. Samson was the strongest man long ago. No one could have beat him, as we all know, until he clashed with Delilah on top of the bed. She told him all the strength was in the hair of his head, and not me. But the people, they say that the men are leading the women astray, but I say that the women of today smarter than the man in every way. That's right, the woman is smarter.
Well, that's what Harry Belafonte said. Welcome back to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Harry Belafonte talking about how a woman smarter. Well, joining us this morning is the founder of the Caribbean Women's Social and Cultural Association of America, Mr. Austin Tewitt. Brother Austin, good morning and welcome again here on Caribbean Forum. It's always a pleasure to have you on here. And why did you, Mr. Tewitt, a male, create this organization, and what have been some of its major accomplishments over the past 25 years?
Giving recognition and honor to our women's particular virtues and their accomplishments over the years in holding our social order together. As for some of the accomplishments, this organization, this movement, I would say, was put into place in response to the top-down approach to our social order, our social fabric. And so that's why it was done on June 26, 1986, at the United Nations, not under its auspices, but at its facilities. And the CUSCA, we call it, Caribbean Women's Social and Cultural Association, the acronym is CUSCA. And what happened there, it was that body was impregnated with delivering a globally united people from grassroots up. The motto was, and still is, we come together just a few to give of ourselves wisely that all may receive sufficiently. And that birth really came to fruition following an 18-month graphic art contest that brought forth a united people's flag. But and that happened on that winner's presentation was done on the 13th, Mother's Day Eve, the 13th of May, 2006.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. But there are a number of things that happened in accomplishments that took place in the interim, the last of which is the establishing of the Global Grassroots Up Entrepreneurial Summit. We founded the Let Go and Let God Day for Spiritual Renewal on the 16th of May in Grenada, 1999. We established the Economic Moral Booster Day here in New York in September of 1993. And we ran a small business empowerment reception at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden for 7 years. That was simultaneously with the, call it CAPC, the Caribbean American Trade Connection, before we had this easy connection, online connection. This was a book that provided, created connection between, linkage between the Caribbean and its diaspora. And we encourage that to happen. We are encouraging that to happen throughout the world, wherever the diaspora expands, especially in the urban areas of the metropolitans across the world. In a nutshell, that's some of the accomplishments.
You were quoted, Mr. Tewitt, as saying, we are seemingly engulfed in an era of infinite crossroads where individual differences are fiercely competing to the demise of our common good, unquote. Could you expound on that statement, please?
Well, it is clear that where our individual differences should be celebrated for common good rather other than that, we are having, they're competing. I think this is coming from a culture, from the Ta Dong. Everything that is established, it is established as an exclusive entity, whereas each should be established for the benefit of the whole, since the whole is inseparably connected. It's our refusal to recognize that, to celebrate the individual differences, that I think is creating the a social order that breeds. We're at the point of a crisis of trust.
There appears to be Caribbean disunity in the region, especially since the collapse of the Federation back in the 1960s. Would it be more challenging or less problematic to accomplish Caribbean unity in America?
I think that I would put it more or less. It's necessary. When we look at it, the linking the Caribbean with its diaspora is crucial. It's happening for our own good. It's happening. It has been happening for years. When you look at the remittance that go back into the Caribbean,
millions of dollars,
and that's been happening over the years. It's just a matter of lack of recognition of the value of this. And I think that Caribbean unity in the metropolitan areas around the world, that is too important to be left to chance. And that's one of the major reasons we established this movement as a matriarch that can gather its offspring together so that we can work in harmony. It's possible. But yes, I think it is just as important on both sides of the ocean that we work together, and this movement is doing that. In the 25th, we are celebrating the 25th anniversary next Sunday. That's June 26, 2011,
right,
coming from 1986, and this is where we are going to establish. We do have a Caribbean Unity Forum, but we are going to, out of this, we're going, the woman, the Caribbean, the woman organization is going to be giving birth to the United Peoples Inclusive, and that will be exhibiting the purpose or the mission of the Caribbean Women's Social and Cultural Association of America.
If you can just pull that apart a little bit for us, please, Austin. The United Peoples
Inclusive.
Inclusive.
Right. That is in response to the exclusionary approach that everything, every entity that comes forward, for one reason or another, it seeks to prove its superiority to others. And so with the United Peoples Inclusive, this is the structuring of an abode where people would come together to exchange ideas and engage in joint ventures that will really promote entrepreneurial activities.
Earlier this, yes, go ahead.
We recognize the unemployment crisis,
mm-hmm,
that is not looming but intensifying globally. We truly can't really be isolated, operate in the isolated way we have in the past.
Well,
globalization is for real.
Right, you have opened the door for my next question.
Okay.
What impact has the global economic meltdown and unemployment that you just so aptly referred to, as well as the disarray of many governments in Europe and North Africa, the Middle East, what impact has have these occurrences had on your organization's thrust to build confidence in us striving for global socio-economic equilibrium?
Well, I believe the clarity is clear now. It's undeniable that without this harmony that we've been preaching for, not preaching but promoting, we call it social leveraging for so many decades, it is clear now that it's something that we have to contend with, we have to address. The impact, however, is evident throughout the world. We are seeing what's taking place. The people are revolting, but from whence we are coming, this we responded because of this. The visionary women that assisted in putting this together, we saw this coming, and it's going to be worse it's going to continue to escalate if we don't do something about it. And that's why we're putting the United Peoples Inclusive together, because there has been too much exclusion. Our social order, our social fabric has been built on excluding others. So we're saying that we know that that will not change from the top down. And this is why we call it the United Peoples Inclusive, and in the creating of the United Peoples flag, the one thing that we ask each of the competing artists to make sure that you include in your design is are these words, by our people's will, from grassroots up. So the grassroots up unstructured experience that we've been having as long as we could remember, we have to change that, because it can only happen from the soil of the social order, the society, and that soil, the fertility of that soil is in the masses of the people. And so this is why we look at it and we made that statement, by our people's will, from grassroots up. The harmony between the but those who are in control and those who are being controlled, there has to be a different approach.
What's your reaction, Austin, to the women in Saudi Arabia who are now defying measures that they are not allowed to drive? As a man, the founder of this women's organization, what's your reaction to the steps that they have taken?
There is no change here, because I know that these things are happening throughout the world, and the change must come, because we cannot continue. It's not sustainable. This behavior is not sustainable. The things that the kind of control that leadership seek to apply to their masses, it just can't happen. It's not sustainable. It's bad for them as well, for the leaders. As a matter of fact, it could be worse for the leaders.
Saudi Arabia is the only country in the world that does not allow women to drive.
Yeah.
Why hasn't the international community put much more pressure?
Brother Bob, these questions we ask, these questions are for, it's not for the international community, it's not from the top down, it's not going to happen. They are friends, they are exclusive, and that's what will continue. It's not about fairness and equality. Our world has not been running on that. But it we have to look at it for what it is, so that we can bring it to what it ought to be. And so this is the Saudi Arabia is connected. It's a favorite nation to the leading nation of the entire world. And so this is clear. We can't sit back and simply wring our hands and say why the international community doesn't come in. The international community has demonstrated its fractured policy. Yes, it's powerful. It has might. But the policy is fractured. And we can't keep blaming them when these things happen. We need to look at ourselves. That's what the United Peoples Inclusive is about, Brother Bob. And this conversation is not simply a conversation. This is an experience that we all need to share.
Absolutely. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. We're chatting with Austin Tuitt. He is the founder of the Caribbean Women Social and Cultural Association of America out of Brooklyn, New York. And this organization is an express lament of Mr. Tuitt. It's immersed in the lifelong struggles of Caribbean peoples. And Mr. Tuitt was moved by an intense resolve to erect an edifice in which true gender harmony can prevail and flourish. If you'd like to join us in discourse, or you're calling within the United States, you can call us at area code 727-565-1599. If you're calling us from across the pond in the United Kingdom, it's 440-203-36629. You did allude to the United Peoples flag a short while ago, Mr. Tuitt, as back in May 13th of 2006, your organization produced that flag. Share with us, please, the process to come up with this flag and what are the elements on the flag that would clearly show unity among our people.
Okay, number one, the flag approach, that you need a rallying emblem for anything that you're doing. The United Peoples Inclusive, which will come of age next week, is coming out of the Caribbean Women Social and Cultural Association of America. Now, the flag, the process of coming up with a flag, it was an 18-month graphic arts contest. It was an open contest. We had 16 different Caribbean countries that entered into that. People from 16 different Caribbean countries that entered into that process. The flag was not designed with particular colors like the average flag being designed. We were calling on the artists to bring a spirit to the flag, and that would be, and so the judges looked to see that spirit. For instance, this flag has 27 stars on it, and those 27 stars represent the initial group of Caribbean countries that came together. It has a stream of gold in it, and that represents I can't remember exactly now what the artists, each one had to bring that. But there is also a seamless joining of the sky and the ocean, it also has a dove representing peace. But the most important thing there that rallies us, the rallying core cry, is by our people's will, from grassroots up. That's the inscription on the flag.
That's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it?
By our people's will, from grassroots up. And it's a treasure. We have been inspired to come this far. And you know, Brother Bob, I think I could take the opportunity to say here to the public that that the Marcus Garvey spirit was emblematic at that winner's contest, because you were there to present that.
Yes, I was.
At that point. When it comes to the global Caribbean representation, the book by that title that you interviewed me on, we have two chapters in the book on Marcus Garvey and two on Tubal Uriah Buzz Butler.
And that book you're referring to, that's a global coalition Caribbean representation.
Yeah, the global Caribbean representation. And also the book has an example of what we're talking about when we talk about the United Peoples Inclusive. We did a 3-year research, and that research was empirical. We met people on the street and the bus and the subway, at their place of work, and interviewed people, 50 words more or less, These were primarily people from Grassroots Up that have over 220-something comments in that book. It is not just a book, I would say, but it's an example of what we're talking about, how easy we can communicate for our common good, bring our differences together for our common good. That's an example of... The book is an example of how we are continuing to do that from Grassroots Up.
Earlier this year, you spearheaded the Global Grassroots Up Entrepreneurial Summit at the Sangre Grande Civic Center in Trinidad. What were some of the highlights, Mr. Tuitt, and accomplishments of that event?
Well, that event had focused primarily on how we identify our natural resources from which we can glean products and commodities having a controlling interest. And that we sought to present to the people who were there as the basis of entrepreneurship. In other words, bringing our community together whereby we will be the market itself, and we will be the entrepreneurs and the enterprise that would take place in that. And so we are looking at it from a global perspective. So the reason we went to back into the Caribbean to do that is because we are acknowledging that there is no global without the local. And so the linkage here is what's going to give us the organized market that we need to be successful with every entrepreneurial venture. It's in a nutshell, I gave you that in a broad sense. And so the topics dealt with, number one, the topic was looking at the need to belong, our innate need to belong to each other. And we looked at intellectual property, what we have to redefine that. We have to define that for ourselves, Grassroots Up people. How do we bring together a sharing and a respecting? How do we bring together the individual publishers and producers with the street vendors so that we can create something whereby we would respect each other rather than seeking to just, as we call it, cut and run, quote unquote.
What can one expect at the 25th anniversary of the Caribbean Women's Social and Cultural Association of America on June 26th?
What we can expect here, we would see the symbolic hoisting of the flag to consecrate the United Peoples Inclusive. We would be recognizing some of those individuals that came to that stayed with us throughout the decades. We will, and the primary thing that we would be doing here, and that would take maybe 2.5 to 3 hours, we're going to engage in a roundtable discourse, whereby we have a number of themes or topics that we will address. And in that, we would have, you know, we would have an opening of each of the theme, but it would be open for discussion with the whole group. Anyone can come in at any time, and of course, we would have a timekeeper for that. But we are not saying, well, this one is going to come to make a presentation, and everyone else just listens to this individual. We're saying that everyone, it's all inclusive, and that's the primary thing. And then we would, when we break, we would go into a solidarity dinner to continue the in networking and interacting. Can I mention a number of the themes that we selected?
Please do.
One, we selected, number one, morality. We want to look at our morality, where that is coming from, what role it plays in our social order, each one of these. Then we're going to look at early child care. What happens, how the entertainment that we are having with our teenagers now, that's what it is primarily. And claiming that we are trying to change the violence and what have you that taken place, the negative things that happening among our young people, we have already missed the point. That should have been nurtured from early child from the early stages before
right.
A child is 2 or 3 years old. We're looking at our healthcare, what's happening across the board, how the healthcare is really the sick care industry. We're looking at our education, what kind of education we are getting. We are still paying for enormous education that will bring us out to get a job or to commit us to perpetual servitude. And that education is becoming more expensive, and we're getting less from it. We want to look at our education.
And even just looking at the Caribbean, the serious brain drain that the Caribbean has suffered has been rather costly, educational-wise.
And it's all over. So the education that we are getting is to get a job. And we are saying that we're looking to get education that will teach us how to create a job, and that's why the Entrepreneurial Summit. And we're looking at our culture, what's happening with our culture, how our culture is being used, how we can take our culture and stimulate entrepreneurship with it rather than simply enjoy it. We're looking at our culinary arts, what we are eating, how we're preparing our stuff, how we used to prepare our what we eat, and how it has changed through the, of course, genetic engineering of our foods and the kinds of things that we put in our food. We want to go back to nature.
Oh, pesticides.
Right. The poisoning of our foods.
Well, this sounds as if it's going to be an extremely interesting summit.
And the two closing
mm-hmm.
ones are media, individual, and community, and mindfulness. Media, individual, community, and mindfulness.
How can one get some further information, Mr. Tuitt, if they would like to attend this community forum on the 26th of June, or to even get a copy of your newest book, A Global Caribbean Representation?
Okay, let me start with the email. The email is gcr.lglg@yahoo.com.
Repeat that, please.
gcr.lglg@yahoo.com.
Go ahead.
The telephone number is 718-284-4453. 284-4453.
Okay, if you'd like to get further information in attending the 25th anniversary of the Caribbean Women's Social and Cultural Association's forum, it's Sunday, June 26th. And for further information, you can call area code 718-284-4453, or you can email Mr. Austin Tewitt at GCR, as in Global Caribbean Representation, LGLG@yahoo.com. Could you give us an address, Mr. Tewitt, as to where this forum will be held?
It is 1601 Nostrand Avenue, between the avenues of Tilden and Snyder and Tilden.
Well, Mr. Austin Tewitt, thank you as usual for joining us here on Caribbean Forum. We wish you and your organization all the best, and congratulations in reaching this milestone of 25 years. I can't believe it has been that long.
What a great joy with you at all times. And we are already looking in the future to the first anniversary, where we will be, the UPI would be the focus, of the vehicle that will be carrying us through from here on in.
Well, we look forward to having you on when that's in place.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
And all the best to all of the listeners. Please think about it and make your call.
Thank you very much, Mr. Austin Tewitt, the founder of the Caribbean Women's Social and Cultural Association of America. Thank you, sir.
All the best.
Hi, I'm Alan Bomar Jones, and you're listening to Caribbean Forum with Ron Bob Simple.
On Sundays from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we'll bring you Golden Sunday Sounds with me, Ron Bob Simple. A relaxing 3 hours of music from around the world. Music is the food of love. So tune in every Sunday evening from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Golden Sunday Sounds.
Tune in to Africa Live with your host, Yabinga Zimbabwe, every Sunday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. as we discuss issues facing African people around the world, from Brooklyn to Brixton, Cameroon to Caracas, here on UhuruRadio.com.
You're listening to UhuruRadio.com. Voice of the International African Revolution.
Yes, as I mentioned on the broadcast earlier, that we were in the midst of celebrating Juneteenth. Because although Abraham Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation on September 22nd, 1862, with an effective date of January 1st, 1863, it had minimal immediate effect on most slaves' day-to-day lives, particularly in Texas, which was almost entirely under Confederate control. The Texas resistance to the Emancipation Proclamation and through slavery was very prevalent. In East Texas, it was not as common in the western areas of Texas, particularly the Hill Country, where most German Americans were opposed to the practice. The people of Texas were informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the executive of the United States, that all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired labor. Well, that day has since become known as Juneteenth, or name derived the words June and 19th. Juneteenth is the oldest known celebration commemorating the ending of slavery in the United States and has actually been an African-American tradition since the late 19th century. And tomorrow, June 19th, we'll be celebrating Father's Day, even though Father's Day and Mother's Day is every day. But we're going to have a special tribute for all our fathers during Golden Sunday Sounds tomorrow evening, Sunday, from 7 until 8 p.m., and then we'll have some Golden Sunday Sounds, oldies from yesteryear, from 8 until 10 p.m. So tune in, and we'll see you tomorrow. Here is Mr. Monty Alexander as he continues to celebrate his 50 years in music with that Bob Marley hit. Stir it up. Go ahead, Monty. Enjoy this musical interlude. kind of sweetie. Yeah, Monty Alexander with Stir It Up. Here's a little taste of what we'll share with you tomorrow evening. This is for all you fathers. This is by Natural Black.
You are traveling at top speed. Every woman cannot stop breathing. Fathers, listen up. Aye. Fathers, the little youth do not left them. Stand up to responsibility when you get them. Nourish and care and protect them. The one then you fi fetch them. Alright, fathers, the little youth do not left them. Stand up to responsibility when you get them. Nourish and care and protect them. In a good way, direct them. Yeah. Oh, you feel it fall at the burden pan mama. And have summer grow by grandmama. You don't realize them are raised the wrong banner. It's like Alice in a Wonderland. See them. You want to see what them a do figure $1. True, no proper teachings from Dada. Now them a live by the sheets and the gandala. And whatsoever from Dana, Dana. Fathers, the little youth do not left them. Stand up to responsibility when you get them. Nourish and care and protect them. The one then you fi fetch them. Alright, fathers, the little youth do not left them. Stand up to responsibility when you get them. Nourish and care and protect them. In a good way, direct them. Yeah. Me know this little youth without shame and pride. Because the father does a slip on the slide. Can't get to see him full of tricks and lies. Only talk about tricks and fries. I better you give the youth all of the franchise. Remember, no youth can live on ice. You're surprised when you see the weapon size. Where is the best advice? Me need a one, me need a one. Jocko and Tony them. You are profound, but nothing wrong. Just take care of the young me them. Don't give in. Fathers, the little youth do not left them. Stand up to responsibility when you get them. Nourish and care and protect them. The one then you fi fetch them. Alright, fathers, the little youth do not left them. Stand up to responsibility when you get them. Nourish and care and protect them. In a good way, direct them. Yeah, me a preach like pastor pan pulpit. Any day, me catch the culprit. Bad, 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 me woulda insult it. Anyway, go and go hunt it. Yeah. Illiterate sit, no make them done sit. Stand up by them side, do no jump ship. The whole arm pan one, who no come quick. Give him couple from the drumstick. Fathers, the little youth, do no left them. Stand up to responsibility when you get them. Nourish and care and protect them. The one then you fi fetch them. Alright, fathers, the little youth, do no left them. Stand up to responsibility when you get them. Nourish and care and protect them. In a good way, direct them. Fathers, the little youth do not left them. Responsibility when you get them. Nourish and care and protect them. No afraid to fetch them.
That day I'll always remember. Yes, I will. Cause there was the day that my daddy died. I never got a chance to see him. Never heard nothing but bad things about him. Mama, I'm depending on you. Tell me the truth.
Mama just hung her head and said, son,
Papa was a rolling stone. Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
And when he died,
all he left was brother alone. Oh, Papa was a rolling stone, my son, yeah. Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
And when he died,
all he left was brother alone.
What you say that Papa never worked a day in his life?
And Mama, some bad talk going around town saying that Papa had 3 outside children and another wife. And that ain't right.
Heard some talk about Papa doing some storefront preaching, talking about saving souls and all the time leeching. Dealing in debt and stealing in the name of the Lord. Mama just hung her head and said,
Papa was a rolling stone,
my son.
Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
And when he died,
oh,
he left his brother alone. Hey,
Papa was a rolling stone.
That comet.
Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
Yes, Papa was a rolling stone. The tempting temptations. I'd like to wish all you fathers a happy Father's Day if you don't join us tomorrow on Golden Sunday Sounds. Happy Father's Day is every day. Happy Mother's Day is every day. But we'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on the Uhuru Radio Network. I'd like to thank my guests today here on the Caribbean Forum. Candidate David Granger, who's speaking to us from Guyana. I'd also like to thank Felicia Passard, the CEO of Caribbeat. And of course, Mr. Austin Tewitt, the founder of the Caribbean Women's Social and Cultural Association of America. What's your thoughts? They become words. What's your words? They become actions. What's your actions? They become habits. What's your habits? They become character. What's your character? For it becomes your destiny. Those 10 two-letter words, if it is to be, it is up to me. Because we do have many rivers to cross. We'll ask Mr. Jimmy Cliff to take us home. Have yourself a wonderful and safe weekend. I'm Ron Bob Simple. See you.